The implications of this fact were stated by Swami Vivekananda. Two ways are left open to us. The way of the ignorant, who think that there is only one way to truth and that all the rest are wrong. And the way of the wise, who admit that according to our mental constitution or the plane of existence in which we are, duty and morality may vary. The important thing is to know that there are gradations of duty and morality, that the duty of one state of life in one set of circumstances will not and cannot be that of another. Thus, instead of drawing a sharp line of distinction between worldly and spiritual virtues, as Moore did, Vedanta indicates the existence of graded virtues, virtues which differ according to the different types and conditions of humanity. This does not mean, however, that the universal ideal of non-resistance and non-violence should be adapted to the individual temperament. For the high spiritual goal of life must be kept in view by all men, but at the same time, different levels of being must be recognized so that everyone may be enabled step by step, sooner or later, to attain to the supreme good. Non-resistance is therefore recognized by Vedanta as the highest virtue. But all people under all circumstances are not expected to live up to it in its highest form. On the contrary, Vedanta points out that for some it is necessary to learn to resist evil and by this means grow in moral strength to a point where they can endure it. Consider the man who does not resist because he is weak or lazy and will not make the effort to do so. Is there any merit in such non-resistance? Then consider another who knows that he can strike an irresistible blow if he likes, and yet does not strike, but blesses his enemy. In the words of Vivekananda, the one who from weakness does not resist commits a sin, and therefore cannot receive any benefit from his non-resistance, while the other would commit a sin by offering resistance. That is to say, we must gather the power to resist. Having gained it, we must renounce it. Then only will non-resistance be a virtue. But if we are weak and lazy and pretend to ourselves that we are actuated by the highest motives, we do not merit praise. Of the non-resistance which derives from strength, Swami Vivekananda said, "This non-resistance is the highest manifestation of power in actual possession, and what is called the resisting of evil is but a step on the way towards it." Once a young disciple of Sri Ramakrishna was crossing the Ganges in a ferry boat from Calcutta on his way to visit his master. The other passengers in the boat were speaking against Sri Ramakrishna, saying that he was not a man of renunciation, but a hypocrite who enjoyed the comforts of life. When the disciple heard this, he protested, but the passengers ignored him and continued to criticize Sri Ramakrishna. Then the disciple became very angry. He jumped to his feet and threatened to sink the boat. The passengers saw that he was an athletic youth, well able to carry out his threat. They were frightened and begged his pardon. Not another word was said against Sri Ramakrishna during the rest of the trip. Later, when the disciple reported the incident to Sri Ramakrishna, the master was displeased. "Be indifferent to what mean-minded people say," he told the young man. "Think what a great crime you were about to commit under the influence of anger." And he taught him never to offer violence under any circumstances. However, on a different occasion, another of Sri Ramakrishna's disciples was crossing the Ganges by boat, and once again the passengers were talking against Sri Ramakrishna. The disciple felt distressed, but being of a mild nature, he decided that the passengers were not to be blamed. They were speaking in ignorance because they did not know his master personally. The disciple felt that he could do nothing about this, so he kept quiet. Later, when he told Sri Ramakrishna about the incident, he thought his master would laugh about it. But Sri Ramakrishna reproved him severely. "What?" he exclaimed. "You call yourself my disciple, and you let people slander me in your presence?" Sri Ramakrishna's advice seems altogether contradictory, but the reason for it, of course, is that he was dealing with two very different individuals. He wished to correct the over-aggressiveness of the one who was ready to be taught non-violence and to correct the timidity of the other by teaching him first to resist evil. When we realize that duties and conduct must vary to suit individual lives and circumstances, we can see why Sri Krishna in the Gita urges Arjuna to fight, a point which has often been misunderstood, whereas Christ in his sermon urges his disciples to practice non-resistance. In the Sermon on the Mount, Christ gives the highest teachings about non-resistance because he is addressing disciples who are dedicated monks, and he is speaking to them in surroundings of peace and solitude. The message of the Gita, however, is given by Sri Krishna on a battlefield to a householder disciple, a warrior by profession. Arjuna has not yet reached the spiritual enlightenment which would permit him to renounce action. To fight is his duty, dictated by his character, which his past thoughts and actions have imposed upon him. Therefore, Sri Krishna points out to his disciple, "Your own nature will drive you to the act." The teacher realizes that what Arjuna considers his revulsion from the act of killing does not stem from spiritual realization but from cowardice. Not by shirking his duty but by performing it, and by practicing devotion and self-surrender to God, Arjuna can ultimately transcend the law of cause and effect and realize the highest spiritual truth. It is true that from the standpoint of transcendence, there is no duty, no action, no physical universe of name and form. Only Brahman, the Absolute, exists. But before we are united with Brahman in our consciousness, we must employ a set of relative values. That is why Sri Krishna teaches Arjuna and every spiritual aspirant the way of action from inertia to illumination. We must proceed from where we stand if we are to have true spiritual growth. But the problem remains. How are we to apply the teaching of non-resistance to our own lives? A householder devotee of Sri Ramakrishna one day asked the master what he would do if a wicked person were about to harm him. And in reply, Sri Ramakrishna told the following parable. There was once a holy man who came to a village. The villagers warned him that he must not go along a certain path because a venomous snake, which had killed many people, always lay there. "It won't hurt me," said the holy man, and continued on his way. Sure enough, the snake approached, reared its head, hissing and ready to strike. But when it saw the holy man, it prostrated humbly at his feet. The sage taught it to give up the idea of biting and killing. According to instructions, the snake, having received initiation into spiritual life with the sacred name of God, crawled off to its hole to pray and meditate, and the holy man proceeded on his way. Soon the boys of the village discovered the change in the character of the snake. Knowing that it was now harmless, they would attack it with sticks and stones whenever it came out of its hole, but the snake would never strike back. After a while, the snake grew so weak from its injuries that it could scarcely crawl. Only rarely, at night, it would come out of its hole in search of food. When next the holy man came to that village, he was told that the snake was dead. "That's impossible," said the sage. "It cannot die until it has attained the fruit of the holy word with which it was initiated." He went to the snake's hole and called it. Hearing its teacher's voice, the snake came squirming out, crippled from the blows it had received, and terribly thin because it was not getting enough to eat. The holy man questioned it about the reason for its condition. "Revered sir," the snake replied, "you asked me not to harm any creature. I have been living on leaves and fruit. Perhaps that's why I am so thin." The snake had developed the virtue of forgiveness and had forgotten that the boys had almost killed it. The sage said, "No, there must be a reason other than want of food that is responsible for your condition. Try to remember." Then the snake recalled, "Oh, yes, some village boys beat me, but I wouldn't bite them. I just lay silently and suffered their torments." The snake expected to be praised for not resisting evil. To its great surprise, however, the holy man became quite cross. "How foolish you are," he cried. "I told you not to bite. Did I tell you not to hiss?" The householder, who must live in society and fulfill his duty towards his family, may need to hiss now and then in order to defend himself against hostile actions. The goody-goody man who lets himself be cheated and tricked is foolish, not saintly. But although the householder may protect himself, he must never be malicious or revengeful. He may hiss, but he must never inject venom. The monk, on the other hand, must strive to practice nonviolence in its higher form. The devotee of God who perseveres in his spiritual practices eventually reaches a state in which nonviolence in thought, word, and deed is natural to him. Then, with mind absorbed in God and heart purified by devotion, he does spontaneously what Christ asks of him. He loves his enemies, blesses those that curse him, does good to those that hate him, and prays for those who persecute him. Then, truly, he is the child of his Father in heaven. Chapter 4. Be ye therefore perfect. Matthew 5:48, 6:8. Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect.